This episode is brought to you in part by Thomas Nelson, publisher of But God Can, How to Stop Striving and Live Purposefully and Abundantly. Written and narrated by Becky Kaiser and is available everywhere audiobooks are sold.
Welcome back to the Build a Better Us podcast. The president of Build a Better Us, BJ Thompson, and licensed therapist John J.P. Parker are about to discuss spiritual, relational, and personal development from a refreshing perspective. Be sure to stay tuned to the end to find out how you can become a part of the BBU Nation. But for now, we hope you enjoy this conversation with BJ and J.P.
Hello, everybody. I'm John Parker.
And this is BJ Thompson.
And this is the Build a Better Us podcast. Today, we back at you. No fluff, no frills, just, 100. Fire, smoke, flames. Like, that's what we're here to do.
That's right.
And today, just getting right to it, man, we're talking about settling. The moments you settled. When you've gone from thinking that, you know what, I'm that man out here, to realizing, like, what was the song? Wanksta with 50 Cent when he put Ja Rule out there. What happened, man? We say, man, homie. In high school, you was the man, homie.
You was the man.
You know what I mean? We talking about,
that's all I know.
Yeah, we talking about those levels. You know, like when you used to be the man, homie, then something happens in life and you're just like, yeah, you know what? Round is a shape. So my stomach being round, it's still a shape. So technically, I'm in shape.
Oh my gosh.
Right? No.
I missed.
Yes, no.
That's it. Landed. Didn't land well. I was over here scratching my head. When you said round is a shape, I was like, "What is round? Oh, my stomach is round. Therefore, it is a shape." Yeah. No. So today we want to talk about moving from being in shape and round and just kind of settling. You know, it was called a beer belly. You know, and Deuce was rocking it for a while, and it was a sign of wealth.
Yeah, it was.
Right.
It was.
So that was a way to settle in. Looking like you're doing your thing because you overweight. And now it's like, man, I got wealth. That's why I have a big belly. And so, yeah, so we want to talk about today how to move from being tired and settling to being inspired or being an inspiration. JP, is that a fair assessment?
I think it is. I think it is. You did that really well, man. Okay. Like, you practice it.
Appreciate it, man. I tried to. I'm professional.
You're right.
Yeah. No, I appreciate it. Yeah, so we were just talking offline. And, you know, we always have the interesting stories. I think this is more of like a cultural story, though. I was watching a comedian, Kev, on stage, and he was talking about going to the swimming pool and coming home with red eyes. So I don't know if you remember this. There was a point in time where you would go to the community pool for the day.
Yep.
And some kids kind of lived there during the summertime. This is before, you know, they had great camps. You stayed home. And you watch cartoons and you play with your friends all day long. And he was talking about the sandwich that you made getting out the pool, which is like had chips and a bunch of stuff right? And I was laughing, just thinking like, wow, we have a lot of similarities in it. And so just by way of illustration, I was just thinking about all the different types of meals. I don't think my kids know about this. There was a point in time where, you know, eating bologna, ramen noodles, wasn't just like an option. It was the
gourmet
option.
Gourmet.
It was like literally you had like ramen competitions. You had to like figure out, you know, who was going to do the spicy pack that week and who was going to have to stick with the beef, bro. Right. And so just thinking about all those different things, man, I was just thinking like, yo, as a latchkey kid, the oldest of three, I was responsible for cooking the meal, you know, and we would get home from school and walk into the house, and there were no, you know, parental supervision. I was of age, just in case you listen.
It's too late. They can't arrest your parents now, man. If they can't arrest them for buying you them shoes and them pants, bro, they can't arrest you now. The stranglers.
Listen. If you got tough skin today, then cool. Listen, I'm with the funnies, man. Listen, JP. If you got the jokes and you with the funnies today, I'm definitely.
I was simply stating facts, bro. That's all I'm doing.
So what I was trying to say was there was a point in time when you would come home and there would literally be no groceries. And so you had to be innovative. Do you remember some of the innovative meals? This is a gourmet meal Do you remember a sugar sandwich?
Absolutely.
Did y'all have those in Cali?
They did. Well, I mean, my mom put me up on game. So, you know, I doctored it up a little bit. But I do remember, you know, the strength of a sugar sandwich.
Bro, how do you doctor up a sugar sandwich?
I mean, you could do certain things. Like, you could bake it so that it gets a little crispy and it becomes like Cinnamon Toast Crunch. You know, like Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Right, I forgot. This is true.
You know what I'm saying? So, but my parents are of the, or my mom at least, is of the other generation, who was just straight sugar or mayonnaise or some other sandwiches you'll mention. No, I want to take your thunder. Go ahead.
That's exactly right. No, listen, and today we'll call these struggle sandwiches, mm-hmm. right? But at the time, they were just a part of the rotation. You have mayonnaise sandwiches. Some people love mayonnaise sandwiches. You get some bread and you could put the mayo on it and it would be, you know, I'm not saying you loved it. If you had Miracle Whip, it could actually be decently tasty.
You can pretend there's meat inside.
you could pretend, but then, you know, you get that creamy white sauce. It really comes to an end very quickly. And then you had the butter sandwich. Mm. Did y'all ever make peanut butter, sugar kind of sandwiches?
Nah, I think I probably would have got in trouble for that one. You had to kind of choose. You had to pick or choose
got
which
it.
One.
Yep. Got it. Got it. Yeah. So we would kind of mix it up at times. But again, we had a long list of sandwiches ranging from bologna to sugar to butter to wish sandwich, which is just basically, I just wish we had something on it. And, yo, they became so, like, normal when I think about it. They became not just, like, this struggle meal. They became just, like, the rotation of food. Mm. What we were going to eat when we were getting home, right? And I think about that as we discuss being tired or settling in life, that instead of something just kind of being a season or a situation where you're like, man, you know, this is something that I usually don't partake in. Now, what we do is we take those moments of what we would, you know, call the struggle moment, and we build our habits. We build routines, we build our lives around it and make it the normal thing, right? Like, I'm coming home, can't wait to make the sugar sandwich, right? And even as you grow out of that. And so today we want to talk about, how do you leave that? How do you leave this mindset that consistently puts you on a bare minimums where you're just kind of creative with it to saying, like, I'm thriving, right? JP, talk to us about a tired moment in your life. What's a moment you was like, yo, I think I just kind of settled? In that.
Yeah, man. So for me, and I've told this story in many different ways in different settings, but I think for the area that I noticed that was the biggest impact for me and kind of set me in a trajectory for settling, for not really being myself, not being as aggressive or tenacious or tenacious. Tenacious is not even a word. As tenacious that I should. Tenacious. I was like, what is tenacious? Tenacity. Oh, tenacity. That's what I was looking for. That took the tenacity away from me was my conversion to this, I guess, following the teachings of Jesus Christ. And I was led to believe early on in my faith that life was about being humble and not being aggressive and kind of just putting your head down and you know, somebody slap you across your head, you give them your jacket too, you know, all of that type of stuff, right? So the biggest thing I had in my life going for me at the time of my conversion, I'm 19 years old, was basketball. Like, that's all I had in life. Mm. Like, what else was it? I mean, I'm in college, but who cares? Basketball.
Ball is life.
You know
life.
What I'm saying? Ball is life.
Ball is life.
So I noticed that, man, something happened on the court that kind of resembled my life. And it was this whole idea of like I stopped talking trash. I stopped being aggressive. I stopped, playing defense as hard. Like, all the things that drove me to wanting to win and to be great and to dominate my opponent kind of got taken from me in this idea and these thoughts of what it meant to be a Christian, what it meant to be a believer. And somehow, some way, my wires got crossed and I just settled into a space where just like, man, like if this is what life is about, then, you know, I have to display this humility and this Jesusness that I have on the basketball court. And the only way to do that was to lose sight of the what made me what just gave me that umph. You know what I'm saying? And that was the fearlessness, the tenacity, the throwing elbows, the, you know, if somebody give me a cheap shot, I give a cheap shot back, you know, and nothing.
Did you bite anybody? Don't tell me you bite anybody's ear. Did you bite anybody's ear?
No, that's a different sport, bro. I didn't have to do that in basketball.
Okay.
But you might catch an elbow. You might catch a stiff.
Go ahead, man.
Thank you for that. You can just see like it when they say art imitates life, it was like the game that I displayed on the basketball court became the way I lived my life. And it was a tired existence. It was a like, I don't know what I'm gonna do in life. I don't know what direction to go. I'm lost, I'm confused, I'm soft. It started with this idea of what it means to be a follower of the teachings of Jesus Christ. And then it came into a place where it was like, oh shoot, other aspects of my life. Which probably should have tapered off, but just even the way I approached the opposite sex, it was kind of like the game that I had just kind of shriveled up and died. You know what I'm saying? Although some of that stuff needed to go away, but just on some level, like the confidence that I had that used to exude from me, the mouthpiece that I had, like everything just became this weird approach. And I think that the false narrative I was given about this new humble life I was supposed to have put me in this settled place of life. Like my whole life was this sedated, settled space where I didn't pursue the things that I should have pursued. I didn't approach basketball the way I should have approached basketball. And life just became this sad mess of nothingness, bro. It was bad.
Sheesh. Don't hurt them with the illustration, JP.
I mean, you asked for it, right? This wasn't a happy time.
I know. Hey, listen. But I didn't expect you to get that serious about it, you know? Uh-huh. Make sure you set up an appointment at GoToBuildABetterUs.com.
Uh-huh.
And make sure you set up an appointment uh-huh. with one of our trained professionals. Yeah, so I think about my moment of settling. And along those lines, man, did I ever tell you about my SAT and taking the SAT?
You mentioned it. Uh-huh.
Oh my gosh. So, you know, shout out to the Dallas Independent School District and how they trained and equipped us for this test. And so if you know anything about the SAT, the SAT is essentially a prerequisite, college prerequisite. It's a college entrance exam. And this is basically to measure where you are. Now, here's what's interesting about the SAT. And I don't know why they set it up like this. It's kind of like what you talked about. What's the name of that, the law joint you took? You said
LSAT.
It's kind of like that.
Yeah.
They don't teach it anywhere in the year. The information is actually specialized,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
right? Which is like, it's actually kind of strange when you think about it, is that you go 4 years and you take this test that determines some of your college placement and none of it's being taught in a regular setting, right? So, you know, me being the cool, funny, you know, kick it person that I was, you know, growing up in high school and growing up in Dallas, you know, I took the night before. And
Wait. The night before? Was that the only time you were going to study for the SAT is the night before?
Hey, man, I don't want to hear you. I didn't want to study.
I just want to make sure I heard you correctly. I'm sorry. I want to interrupt again.
But listen, I said they didn't teach you that exam. You had to like just know it, right? You just had to walk in and know it, mm-hmm. right? And so, you know, the night before, friend and I decide to go out and partake in a party. Have a great time. And we had a ball. Drove around the city, went to this party. You know, one turned to two turned to three in the morning. Four turned to five turned into six. And then it hit me. I was like, yo, at 8:00, I need to take my SATs. Okay? This is the true story, bro. So, you know, and this shout out to my parents. My mom is listening to this. So, mom, you don't know about this, but I'm going to tell you now. So, we ended up taking the test. So instead of going to the actual place, you know, going back home and getting ready, I was like, yo, it's 6 a.m. I got to take this test. I may as well pull into the parking lot and sleep in my car.
Oh, okay? Gosh. All right.
So went to sleep in the car for about an hour and a half and then got up because I was tired. And I knew that I needed to take this test. I went into the facility, the school, and I took the test. It's a 4-hour test. Actually, it's a 4-hour exam. And I completed it in an astonishing 30 minutes.
I don't even know how that's possible. Like, because you have sections and you have to take your time and you have to like wait for the facilitator.
It didn't matter. I took it in. This is the true story.
This should not be a true story.
It is a true story,
but it shouldn't be.
Bro, listen, this is like a legit true story. Like, I took it in an astonishing 30 minutes, right? And what I realized in that moment was like, yo, because I think that I can finesse the game and that, you know, I can take this test without study because I have automatic admission. Like, to me, all life was to be like this, right? Mm. And kind of similar to your story of becoming a follower of the teachings of Jesus, you know, I remember being around kind of that culture, and this is my selling moment for real. So SAT was kind of icing on the cake to just tell you where I was at. Following the teachings of Jesus Christ, a lot of the people that I was meeting in these places were like, oh, I'm going to go work in a church. I'm going to go work in a ministry. And so going into college, working in, you know, around all these things, I was like, yo, I'm already struggling in school. Mm-hmm. Right? And I'll never forget somebody asking me, yo, what do you want to do when you get older, this, that, and the third? And I remember saying, like, I want to go into ministry.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And if I'm honest about it now, I think part of the appeal to want to go wasn't because I felt like, oh, I'm just this called, you know, individual, even though I knew I was in some regard. Bro, listen, it was easier.
Mm.
It didn't require no type of study.
Okay, I see where you're going. But, okay.
There we go. Uh-huh. Yeah. You like that? You like how I turned that
did.
Corner? Listen, it didn't require no study for the most part from anything I wasn't interested in. And it wasn't going to cost me anything that was sacrificial beyond doing just the bare minimum of those things. And so that's what I think about in my settle moments. What do you think when you hear those settle moments? What are some ways that you see our culture even settling right now? So clients or culture? Yeah. How do you see people just in the world settling as we talk about settling right now?
The biggest thing that we've talked about in times past, but it's a big glaring light, is the dating culture, right? The seeking partnership, being with someone, being in a situationship. We've got to the place where the swipe rights and the swipe lefts and the
swipe left, swipe right,
right. The lack of no, that's it, bro. That's a song. That's got to be the lack of commitment, the ghosting, the being able to kind of maneuver in and out of situations. On one end, we've come up with all these clever ways to describe the phenomenons of what's happening. But the bottom line is, like, we've got a place where we're tired. People are tired of dating. Mm-hmm. People are tired of trying. People are tired of the awkward first dates. They're tired of the 50 first dates. They're tired of the, you know, just being in this system and in this situation where dudes aren't serious or girls are just chasing clout. They want to just take pictures so they can post them on an Instagram with you, or they want to get flued out, as you like to say.
Get flued out.
You know what I'm saying? And bruh, and it's just a situation where I see the culture where we are, man. The reason why we're in the, well, I can't say we, but the reason why culture is in the situation is in is because it's tired, and we don't realize that we are tired. We don't realize that we are settling. We don't realize that our game has gotten soft, that we're not as aggressive on the court as we used to be. We don't realize that it's just easier to do this. And it is, because again, you have to think about it. Dating, relationships, marriages, they take work, right? I'm not saying they have to be extremely hard and tough and difficult. Like, I'm over that. I used to teach that, but now I'm at a point where I'm like, yo, things don't have to be rough and tough. We make things like more difficult than they should be. They can be, and they will be, but it's up to us how we settle those things. That's another podcast for another time. But relationships are hard in the sense of dealing with other people, especially when somebody's not exactly you, right? Because we're all perfect. Good. And it's the other person that's the problem. But in working through these things, man, like jobs, man, you quit a job, you quit a relationship, you ghost on people, you bounce out of friendships, and people don't know how to kind of negotiate and navigate these things anymore because we've lost touch of that. And so I think that is one of the biggest areas when it comes to just people are tired of trying relationally, whether it's friendships, whether it's romantically, whether it's, you know what I'm saying? Like, Like, even jobs, man, you hear people all the time, like, man, you know, the story, like, oh, I'm not in college anymore and I moved to a new city and it's so hard to find friends. I'm like, what? How is that a thing? Like, you just go to places where people are that like to do the things that you do, start some conversations and whatever. But people are tired of doing that too. So they just don't even try. So anyway.
No, that's good. No, I appreciate it. I think you're right. I mean, you know, you talking about low hanging fruit. To me, that is a low hanging fruit. You know, there was a point in time where we were talking about, man, you know, what are these men going to do? What are these women going to do? And, you know, there was an actual serious like contemplation of like something should be different. And I think you're very right. I think that, you know, if as I observe, you know, culture and people, I think we have just kind of said like it just is what it is. And the outcome has become like, man, it doesn't really matter. And I'm like, it matters. Right. Like, you know, some of y'all are wasting a lot of time. And so you listen to the podcast right now. It's possible for you to waste your time two ways. One, being so involved in pointless relationships that you look up in the next 10, 15 years and you go, dag, like, I've done all of this and I have nothing to show for it, right? It's like a kid that spends all their money on candy.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have an asset. Like, you spent a lot of money on those J's and they don't yield you a return. They're only as good as the moment, right? So that's on one end. On the other hand, I think there's going to be a lot of people who look up and because they were afraid to take risk, they realize like, yo, that was silly. There is a moment of like, you have to take risk. So listen, I'm not in the school of thought of I kissed Aiden goodbye.
Right, right.
I believe that in a lot of ways, part of relationships is being able to take risks in order to discover who other people are and to figure out who you are within the confines of you discovering yourself through relationship. And so I think there's going to be people who look up and go, man, I never took enough risk. I didn't ask that girl or guy out. I never put myself in a position relationally where I could be discovered or found. I, you know, found myself being so negative, so cynical about the entire process that the effort that I desire, like it has not manifested into anything that will be meaningful in my life. And so even as you talk about being tired and settling, I think that's a huge thing. Also, I think with marriage, right? Like, you know, if I can go on my hobby horse a little bit, I think this generation is going to look up and regret what it said about marriage. Right. Mm-hmm. To say that marriage is this outdated union. And I think that we're going to look up and realize that ultimately marriage is a good thing. It's like a good, mature thing, even if we've seen bad examples. Right. And so, you know, part of my ideas, again, I'm not trying to be controversial, but y'all can at me if you want to talk about this. No, you can. Is that we need to take consideration of this fatigue that's caused us to be so negative about things that are good. Therefore, we're not participating. So, yeah, I would only amen that. I would say my tired observation with people, I think, is in the faith world. A lot has changed. There's been a lot of institutional distrust that's occurred. And that distrust has led to a lot of hurt, trauma, pain, distrust, anger, revealing of things that, you know, are not typically discussed. And I think people believe that they can go faithless for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
And what I want to say to them is like, yo, you're just tired.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Just settling. You're settling for the cynicism of something. You're settling for trauma. You're settling for the grief of this thing, and you're no longer even fighting for anything that would be good, that would be bigger than yourself, and that would help you be able to not just navigate personal storms, to be able to give hope and inspiration and transformation to those who are going through real things like cancer, like death, like sickness, right? And so what I observe is like a culture that's like grappling with its own faith and trying to figure out, what does that mean? Do I believe? Am I just praying to a universe and hoping that it gives me good back? And I'm like, I guess y'all never seen what happens in nature, right? Like, I was watching, I was watching this video on Facebook, and this fish was in this tank. This catfish was in a tank with this other fish. And this looks like this cool, like no nothing situation. JP, that catfish is swimming around, and you see him kind of like look up at the other fish, and bro, he strike. Swallow this mug whole. Ruthlessly, bro, like death blow, like done. And I'm like, wow, this is what happens in nature all the time. Like,
this what,
like the food chain.
That's what the universe will give you. You want the universe to give you something? That's what the universe gives you.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm like, you want the universe? Yeah. Yo, are we really asking the universe to be these things? And so what I would say is, I think what happens is, it then turns in even to a laziness about the deeper things, the more investigative thing, that would allow you to have a transcendent hope and love despite circumstance while knowing that you yourself are loved. So I don't know. What do you think, JP, just in terms of the tired and settling? Yeah, what do you think, man? What do you think causes people to get to that place that they're just tired? Either financially, professionally, settling. Yeah, what gets us there? How do we get to that place?
It's the cynicism that you kind of hit on, combined with our desire to do it for the gram. And what I mean by that is,
we're not doing it for the vine no more.
I think somebody still does it for the vine, and that's probably problematic.
Bro, Vine is dead, bro. It's dead. Bro, I don't even know. Can you log on a Vine?
I never had one, so I couldn't even tell you, bro. Yeah. I never did it for the Vine. Sorry, man. So what happens is cynicism. We'll look at that. You have people, and you hear about it a lot, I think more from like folks from our generation, where you have this idea of like broken homes and how broken homes affected guys our ages' desires to be in a marriage, right? So you don't see any healthy relationships. You don't see healthy marriages. You don't see the point of being married. You don't see how this could benefit your life in any way, shape, or form. So you grow up avoiding getting married, right? And so I think because of the way in which we can consume information and the way in which everything's at our fingertips, whether it's Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, social medias, the internet, just news, the bombardment.
Tinder.
Right.
Everything.
We're over bombarded with information. So it's wars. It's kids being kept in cages on the borders. It's, you know, all these different things that are happening. And so when you get to the place where you feel like, man, there's no hope or there's nothing I can do, cynicism sets in. And so if you're the type of person that tends to lean towards the cynicism of things, you're going to be really tired because you're being constantly bombarded with all this negativity, with all these things you can't do, in these relationships that you just can't seem to land, you know, all of these things, right? And so this cynicism is what leads us to a place where we just beat down. We just tired. Like with me, with basketball, like I saw it as like, yo, I cannot live out my faith actively on the basketball court. So therefore, while I'm out here, as much as I want to play, I'm going to be the shell of the person who I was. As you would dudes all the time, like all these dudes, they go to these faith institutions and like, man, it's hard to find a good woman. Bro, the ratio is 8-1 in here.
Ooh. Ladies, remember JP said that we are trying to make sure you get the game and that men know that in some ways you waiting for them, ladies. Make sure you listen. I'm going to give you a plug. Go to buildabetterus.com and book a session with JP, fellas, if you need some help on that.
Bro, ahead. I like, dude, I go laugh ahead. At them in their faces. I'd be like, bro, you're out here trying to find some melanated skin with a colonized mind or something. There's something here. What? No, I shouldn't. Hey, man, it's bad cop time. But what I'm saying is you're looking for something to be in this particular package because someone has told you this is what it's supposed to be. And when you can't find that, or whatever the case may be, then you shut down and you stop. Right, there's no good women. There's not blah, blah, blah. You're a liar. That's not the truth. The truth is you're looking for something that doesn't exist or that shouldn't exist or you shouldn't be chasing. And so when you don't find that, you're done. You know what I'm saying? And so I think that is just all of these things that are happening where it's just like, man, you believed a lie or you believe something false and you've bought into something that's untrue. Or you yourself have participated in things that have set you up for failure, and now you're at a loss. And so the cynicism sets in. And then the other thing just, you know, is very easy. Just the idea of, like, because we're bombarded with these images and we're seeing people's, the life that they want us to believe that they live and all these different things, the sadness thereof sets in for us when we're not doing those things. The missing out, the FOMO, the, all these different things that pop up. FOMO is fear of missing out for the older crowd that listens. You kind of get to this place where you're tired. Like, you're no longer inspired. You don't, you know, you would think, people used to think that, oh no, all the social media and all this access and all this news would inspire us to do better. Like, no, it makes us feel like there's no hope, that there's no purpose, that there's no end in sight for us. And so I think those two things, the cynicism and the access to information and the overindulging in this information, because it's good to have the information, but when you just bombard yourself too much, it just becomes too much.
This episode is brought to you in part by Beyond Ordinary Women Ministries, which prepares Christian women for leadership. At BOW, we believe that every woman is a leader because she influences someone. So, whom do you influence? Do you mentor a woman, serve in the workplace, or do you lead a small group, teach the Bible, or even lead an entire ministry? No matter who or how many you influence, our free online resources will help equip you. Our videos, podcast episodes, and articles from experienced women leaders will encourage you and perfect your leadership skills. They offer wisdom for dealing with ministry pitfalls, current biblical issues, health for your own soul, and insights for shepherding others well. In addition, BOW offers Bible studies designed to connect women of multiple generations. They provide a challenge to both women new to the Bible and those wanting to dig deeper. Be our guest and browse all of our free resources and low-cost Bible studies at beyondordinarywomen.org.
Ooh, this is so good, bro. So, I'll just say what contributes to being tired is we want everything to be somebody else's fault. We're either overly critical of ourselves to where we can never really take any risks because, you know, we always fail, or we overly critical of other people, right? To me, it's funny, right? Mm-hmm. It's funny when people, when I tell them I'm going to take a risk in something and they think that their opinion discourages me. Mm. And I'm like, why are you talking to me like that?
Right.
It's so weird. I'm like, I'm the one taking the
risk. Right, right.
Like, I'm the one who's believing that this is going to be one of the top podcasts in the world. Like, this has nothing to do with you. And I'm like, why are you trying to discourage me? And I'm like, this is how you talk to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? Like,
yep. Yep.
Oh, this is how you share with yourself. And what I realize is that we are either overly critical of ourselves or we're overly critical of other people, and we just can't take personal responsibility. So one of my aha moments for why people are tired is they want the weight to be on someone else. They want it to be on that spiritual leader, right, who says that he got a word from the Most High. They want it to be on that boss. They want it to be on that individual who they despise. They want it to be on their mama. Listen, this is your life.
Yeah.
You're doing it because you want to do. Stop saying that the reason why you're doing what you're doing is because such and such made you mad. No. That person only reveals something that was already inside.
Come on now. You're preaching. You preaching.
Oh, I'm about to listen, bro. Listen, man. We got real people with real issues listening to this. Here's what I'm going to say. Stop blaming everybody else. Stop saying it's their fault. Listen, I work with married couples. This is wild. So I work with married couples and, you know, we have to go through mediation and all these different things. And JP, when we start talking about, like, who's at fault and, you know, how do we move forward, all these different things, this is the irony. Nobody thinks it's their issue. They're always pointing to the other person.
Straight up.
And I have to say to them, listen, two things can be true at the same time. That they can both be in the wrong and you can be at fault at the exact same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, what elements of this are you not potentially taking responsibility? And bro, you would just be floored. I know you're not, because you do a lot of the same work, at the amount of people who don't think they have anything to contribute to grow. And I say, see, that's the problem. Mm-hmm. You want to blame shift this to somebody else. You want to be able to say, oh, my parents didn't do that. Okay, well, cool. You know exactly what your parents didn't do. What are you going to do differently? Nothing. Listen, now you're at fault. Now you're at fault because you know better and you refuse to do better. Come on. Right? Come on. And so what I would say is part of the struggle that I have with this tired generation, or I'm sorry, part of the ways I'm becoming a bad cop, yep. Part of the way we become a tired generation is if we only want food that's being put on the plate for us. We only think good things happen when somebody else does it. We do not want to personally participate in the things that would lead to meaningful transformation that come via sacrifice. Here, let me say this again. A generation becomes tired when it does not want to personally participate and take ownership and sacrifice for the things that lead to meaningful transformation. And when you don't have that, here's what you're lacking all the time. You know what you're lacking when you lack sacrifice, participation, and investment? You know what you lack? Gratitude.
Mm, yes, yes, yep.
Listen, bro, I put in work to do what I do. I put in a lot of work, a lot of sacrifice. So when I see growth and change because I've invested, now I'm grateful because I understood what went into it. Listen, if food just shows up every day at the same time, all the time, JP, you become entitled to believe that thing just should show up. And now you default to the missteps of the other person. Mm-hmm, so, sorry, I'm off my soapbox.
No.
JP, talk to us about that. Go ahead.
No, bro, I want to, before ahead. You ask me what you're about to ask me, like that scenario, just what you just remind me of is when you have the domesticated lion who gets fed and fed and fed by the zookeepers or by the lion keepers, and you take that same lion and throw them out in the jungle, they're going to die of starvation. Because they don't know how to hunt. They don't know how to go, you know, fend for themselves. They don't know how to exist in the real world. And it's the same thing you're saying, man. When you're settling and sitting around waiting for things to be given to you, to be handed to you, yes, it is entitlement that gets in the way. But it's also, people don't understand how that sets them up for failure. Not going, not doing, not getting, not thriving, not striving, not working, not hustling, not pressing. It sets you up terribly for real life.
Wow.
And I'm out.
And I'm out, Michael Jordan. Talk to us about thriving. JP, how do we thrive, or how do we become an inspiration?
Yeah.
Start walking us into it, man. Like, if we're all settling and blaming others and not taking responsibility, listen, in significant areas of life, how do we become an inspiration? How we move from being tired to inspired?
Yeah. Bottom line, bro, if you want to be a goat in this life, if you want to inspire yourself so that you may inspire others, it's a very, 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 very assertive life that you have to live. And I don't mean...
What do you mean? Talk to us about that. What do you mean?
I don't mean being rude. I don't mean being a jackass. I don't mean being someone that people hate to see come in the room. But you have to be aggressive and go after what you want. Right? This is not a passive thing. Being inspired, staying inspired, coming out of a slump, getting over being tired is an active pursuit of the thing that you're going after. People, again, like you say, they expect things to be handed to them. They want people to wallow in the pity with them. They want people to get on the woe is me train. It's like, no, man, like you have to go and get it. Go get the money. You know what I'm saying? Like,
push it, right?
And so when people are living goat life, when they're living goat status, when they're the greatest of all time, man, they don't sit back and wait. They don't sit back and wait for somebody to hand it to them. They don't sit back and wait for other people to fish and like, yo, let me hold that fish. You know what I'm saying? Like I've been in places in fishing communities where people will pull up in their fancy cars and buy fish from the fishermen that have been out on the water since 5 a.m. I'm like, bro, when the lights go out, bro, know what I'm saying?
You gonna front me?
I mean, hey, you shouldn't even be eating fish, vegan. So if that is you, then I really got something to say, man. Hey, you can't be pulling up asking to buy people's tomatoes. Grow your own tomatoes, BJ. You know what I mean? But I'm saying, like when the lights go out, when the zombies attack, that guy with that fancy car that's coming to buy the fish, he ain't gonna make it. You know what I'm saying? He gonna be trying to figure out, how do I get to the grocery store? Bro, the lights are out, the zombies are out, but there's no more grocery stores, right? So you have to go out and you have to get it. When you live in life, goat status, man, when you're trying to go from tired to inspired, you have to realize you have to build your own. People will let you build their kingdom, bro. They will let you build their kingdom while you're nothing more than a court jester. They are the kings and queens and sitting on top of the iron throne, and you out here shucking and jiving and make a fool of yourself. People will let you do that. When you're goat, when you're trying to get inspired, bro, you don't let people give you your moves to make. You make the moves you need to make. Good. You know what I'm saying? What I'm saying? Chestnut checkers, man. Like, it's a simple situation. And then I think the other thing, one of the other things, there's many things, but I'll end on this one, is just that goat status, man, is about not settling. If you have people in your life that will let you settle, if I had people that I hooped with and then they saw my game post conversion, it was like, hey, bro, like, you kind of soft out here, bro. Like, I need dudes in my life to be like, hey, bro, where the aggression at? Where the tenacity at, bro? Why you out here laying down, bro? Like, why you not going for the loose ball? Why you not going through those screens? Why you not setting hard picks? Like, if you have people in your life that let you settle, you're not winning. And you will continue to be tired. You won't be inspired. So if people in your life let you settle, they don't love you. If you're not being aggressive, you're not trying to win. And if you out building somebody else's castle while your dreams just run down the drain, you're not living. You're not living. You ain't the goat, bro.
This is some goat status, bro. You bringing some wood. I don't even know what to add to this. Can I add? I mean, you the goat over here. I need to be the greatest of all time. Yeah, so what I would say is, what I would add to this is, you know, part of this is, man, it's all about your circle of influence. I say this all the time. I was just, you know, I sent a tweet out the other day and I said, when you look at your phone log, I just, you know, essentially just said, show me your call log and I'll show you your future or who you become.
Right? Yeah.
And people will go, oh, I'm just talking to my mama. I guess I'm becoming my mama. So then here's my next question. Are you satisfied with the life she's living? Is that what you want? Because that's what you're about to get. And so my simple advice is, if you're not around people that you're regularly talking to, that you aspire to live the type of life that they're living, either physically, spiritually, emotionally, right? You are settling. You are settling, right? The other piece of just moving to being inspired, I think is are you taking risks that reflect your faith, right? And here's what I mean. Like, I don't mean just your faith in terms of theology. I mean your faith in terms of your purpose, right? Mm-hmm. Like, do your risks reflect your faith, right? There's some times in your life where something was risky. Now it's not, right? And I then ask, like, are you doing things that will reflect, like, hey, this is sacrificial for me in this season? Now, again, I'm not saying don't be calculated. I'm not saying don't be, you know, pursue advisors. I am saying, is this something that's stretching you? When I settled and said, oh, I'm just going to work in a church, work in a ministry, bro, it wasn't a risk for me. I knew that I could land a job. I could do these different things. And yet I was flunking out of school, right? And nobody except for one person was like, bro, you need to finish college. And I was like, oh, I guess I need to finish college. Because here's the thing. I grew to a place where I no longer like to take risks. I was like, nah, I've already taken enough risks. I've been in shootouts. I've been in all these different things. Story for another time. I've been in all these different situations. Right. I don't want to take any more risk. And what I would say is, becoming an inspiration means that today, do you take risks that reflect your faith, right? JP, if somebody's listening and they're saying, man, I don't know, you know, what to do. And I'm just lost. Yeah, I hear you talking about becoming an inspiration. And we might have to do a part two. This is actually pretty, like, profound, bro. You kind of, like, went in on us. Bad cop, good cop.
That's what I do.
That you do. Uh-huh. What are some ways, man? What's a way that somebody can get some personal attention? Maybe it's just over the head.
Yeah, yeah. BuildTheBetterUs.com is a website that's popping like popcorn.
Pop.
Yep. There's some tabs at the top. One says get involved. If you slide your cursor over that, you slide that on down to coaching. And you hit that button, and once you go into that world of Build a Better Us coaches, you'll find somebody's there that are willing and able to get you to this point of life where you go from tired to inspired, man. It's that easy. It's very easy.
Good. Yeah, and make sure if you're listening to this podcast, would you kindly share this podcast with others? We want to make sure that we are serving the population, and we're grateful for you. We're grateful for the people who already support this podcast. Make sure you subscribe. If you leave a comment online at BJ116 and see John Roar so we can see it, and make sure we show you some love, because you know we're all about showing our family love, because our job is to help you become a better you
so that we can become a better us.
Thank you for tuning in to the Build a Better Us podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever podcasts are played. You too can become a part of the BBU Nation today by continuing these discussions on social media. Be sure to go like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter at Build a Better Us, and on Instagram at BBU Social. To keep up with other exciting events and resources, visit our website at buildabetterus.com. On behalf of the entire BBU team, we'll see you next time on the Build a Better Us podcast.